Well, hello and welcome to this, the 10th episode of Stuff We Like. We've got a lot to cover in the next little while, so without any further ado, welcome to Stuff You Like. Well, horror of horrors. I discovered the unfortunate demise of a shop which I recommended in Stuff We Like episode 1. Let's not hope that this is the beginning of a new trend where I start to recommend things and then they go bust. But sadly, yes, it's true. The wonderful Spanish cafe, the Brass Mongoose in Blackfriars, is no more. It is fronted by two chain coffee restaurants on the other side of the road instead, which is all very well and good. Chain coffee restaurants are fine, they do the job well. But it's kind of sad when these independent places go downhill and eventually have to close. Pubs the country over are starting to feel the bite. Many have already felt the bite of the recession, and many are continuing to feel the bite of the recession, and the tendency of people now to drink in homes rather than in community places. So, rather sadly, this particular Spanish cafe has also gone the way of those places. Very sad, but there you go. Hopefully, it won't start a new Stuff We Like trend. One shop that definitely isn't closed down is the Monmouth Coffee Company. There's one in Monmouth Street, of course, in Covent Garden, and it was recommended by Jeff Smith a few episodes ago. I managed to pop into the one in London Bridge, which was the one he recommended. It's opposite Borough Market. It's quite a strange place because you walk in and it's kind of open plan. It spills out onto the street. There is one table in the middle for lots of people to sit down on communally, which is quite unusual. And you can pick your food and then go up to the counter and pay for it and then pay for your coffee, which is also very unusual. When I went there, I had a flat white, which was very good indeed, although I kind of wish I had opted for an Americano because I think that would have lasted a bit longer. But yes, the Monmouth Coffee Company, opposite Borough Market, is pretty darn good and worth a visit. I'm currently in one of my favourite locations in London, the embankment of the River Thames. Just opposite me, you can see the spiral of the London Eye and the National Theatre with its permanently scrolling neon sign as well. I'm next to Temple Tube Station, not far from King's College and the Strand. I figured that the Thames is an appropriate place to talk about the next thing that I particularly wanted to talk about, which was Peter Ackroyd's biography of London. It's a huge book, but every page is packed with fascinating insights into our wonderful city. I first borrowed it from Shoe Lane Library, another thing I like, in Fleet Street, just off Fleet Street, when I worked for Reuters. And a lot of my colleagues teased me because I had a habit of borrowing really huge books, such as Ackroyd's biography of London and his biography of Dickens. In his biography of London, obviously, you can imagine, he personifies London as a living, breathing thing, not necessarily a person, but certainly a character in its own right, just as Dickens frequently did in his books. And London appears as a character in many, many works of fiction, not least, of course, Hilary Mantel's works about Thomas Cromwell. But Ackroyd's Londoner biography is so much more than just a history of London, or even a personification of this wonderful, great city. He uses the Thames as the heartbeat, the backdrop, the artery of the city, and the various changes the Thames went through. But he also talks about the underground parts of London. He talks about the overground parts, of course. In one chapter, he takes a location, St. Giles-in-the-Fields, which is sort of in the Soho area, and he talks about its evolution from Roman times as a village just outside of London all the way through its days as a rookery, a very notorious rookery in the days of the Victorians, and, of course, its location as a possible Tom All Alone's from Bleak House in Charles Dickens' book of the same name. And he takes us through its transformation with the creation of New Oxford Street into part of the Tottenham Court Road environment. So he takes certain bits of London, he zooms in on them and gives you a potted history, and then he zooms out again and talks about the transformation of London from a small riverside settlement in its early days right through to the global powerhouse that it is now, the development of Docklands, of course, the development of the Tube and its implications, because with the advent of the Tube, of course, London sprawled out. It no longer was just the square mile or even the environment around the square mile in Cleopatra in the West End and so on, but it incorporated much of suburban London, places that were once villages such as Ruislip and Hendon and Dagenham, of course, were soon incorporated into the sprawl because the Tube connected the outer parts of London with the inner parts of London, and soon you had the zones and what was initially just a small city, nevertheless a powerhouse, of course, in medieval times, but nevertheless it was a small city, soon grew to become the enormous metropolis that we know today, the wonderful, ever-growing, ever-changing, ever-transforming, ever-surviving City of London. A few weeks ago, I caught up with a very old friend called Steve Payne, someone I hadn't seen for many, many years. I think we try and work out how long it is, in fact, during the interview. And I decided to ask him about his five favourite movies. Interview with Steve Payne. Hello, Steve.
Hello, David.
All the way from Bournemouth. So tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm a sci-fi fan, as you'll probably find out shortly.
Okay.
A musician.
And you've actually got an internet webpage and all that kind of stuff, haven't you? YouTube presence.
That's right. I mean, online you can get hold of me as Sci-Fi Funk.
Right.
And that's on YouTube, that's a website, Facebook, everywhere. Hopefully I'm everywhere.
Sci-Fi Funk is what it's called. And with that, what exactly does that do? What does that represent?
Well, it's a dual project. It is all of the music that I've written and produced to recording standards.
Okay.
And that's on SoundCloud. And that incorporates Christian music, my faith. And also my love of electronic funk.
Wow. And then you've got some filmy stuff as well, or that's sort of in development at the moment.
I'm one of these people that wakes up one morning and says, well, I think I'm going to try this now. I think I'm going to redefine myself as this.
Wow.
And to cut a long story short, David, I literally woke up one morning in pain, having come out of hospital, having had a wisdom tooth out.
Oh, right, yeah. Very painful.
And, it was. And I was sitting there, and my mouth was like a hamster, and I was thinking, well, can't we do anything? Why don't we think about things we never thought we could do? And then I thought, well, I've never thought I could do 3D animation. So in my pain, I then said, okay, well, as from today, we're going to do 3D animation.
Wow. Okay, that's brilliant. And so are there 3D animation films out there that we can watch?
You can, and I think the fascinating thing, if I can be so bold about my own attempts, is that you can watch my progress from complete and absolute beginner through to somebody who's, I wouldn't say up there with the best, but certainly other people in the poser community, poser being one of the largest communities of 3D artists.
Okay.
I'm getting some respect from them, so we're obviously moving up the ranks.
Oh, that's good. Wow, the poser community, I've never heard of that. Okay, so that's 3D animation. And Steve, you're going to tell us about your five favourite films.
The top five that I've chosen are the five films that have influenced me the most.
Okay.
At number five is The Colour of Money.
Right.
Do you know that film?
Paul Newman.
Very good. The film is interesting because it's two people's careers, one ending, one starting. Mm-hmm. Paul Newman, having starred in so many great films, is an old man in this film.
Right.
And Tom Cruise is the young upstart teenager.
I remember Paul Newman saying at an interview, someone said, "And would you see Tom Cruise as the new you, the new film star, par excellence?" And of course, Paul Newman said yes. And I thought, well, he's got to say that, hasn't he? But of course, Tom Cruise has gone on to become Tom Cruise, as we know him now. So yeah, that's quite an astonishing choice. Tell me about why you chose that one.
There's a quote from it, which is money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Oh.
And that kind of, if you had to pick one quote from the movie, that sums up the whole movie. What actually happens in the movie is these are two poor hustlers.
Mm-hmm.
One who's retired, Paul Newman.
Yep.
And one who doesn't really know what he's doing with his girlfriend.
Right.
But he's a, as Paul Newman puts it, he's a natural flake, somebody who can wind up the opposition and knows how to throw a game and then, you know, hustle.
Yeah.
The first meal and then win a load back.
Right.
And the gist of the story is he takes him on.
Okay.
Because Paul Newman's the expert. He takes him on and then the film ends with, you're never quite sure who is the best player out of the two because they get to play each other.
Right. I seem to recall, isn't it the sequel to a previous film?
Yeah, I think, or The Hustler or something like that.
Or The
Hustler. I've got that one as well. That's Paul Newman.
Yeah.
And a much younger man.
That's right. And so he plays this character initially as a much younger man, and then gradually you see him get older and older, and eventually he becomes this guy in The Colour of Money. Yeah, The Hustler. Eddie Felton, made in 1961. Playing himself as Eddie Felton and then going all the way up to 1986. Gosh, was it really? It was that long ago. That's incredible.
I thought it was older. I thought it was about 82. Okay, 86.
Yeah, 86. So that's quite something. So we revisited this character, Fast Eddie Felton. Okay, what's your second, your fourth favourite?
The fourth favourite is Wall Street.
Ah.
A film you're familiar with, by the sounds.
Well, everyone's familiar with Wall Street and all that represents, especially in today's economic crisis situation. Mm. So tell me, what was it about this film that you particularly was grabbed by?
You see, this film is very evocative to me because it was made, I think, in the early 80s. I was 87 here.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, the computer screens are similar to those that I worked on when I first started in my own career.
Oh, right. In banking, as I recall.
Yeah, very good, very good.
Yeah.
Although I've always been on the IT side, and I was never a trader.
Right, okay. Unlike these characters.
Indeed.
Mm.
I do know about that world, because later in life I've been a trader. I do understand the mindset. I've been through the joys and the pains.
Yeah.
This film is wonderful because you've got a young Charlie Sheen.
Yep.
And Michael Douglas, probably at the peak of his powers, maybe mm-hmm. slightly before.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's funnily enough, it's another story of a mentor and a young upstart.
Yeah.
And both are talented again, so it has actually a common theme with the previous film.
Yeah. And of course, the whole mantra of greed is good, and the celebration of winning at all costs kind of echoes similar themes to The Colour of Money, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
Because in a way, they win the money, don't they? It's as much winning through the gambling of other people's money that the bankers do.
Yes, and it's a winner-takes-all situation again. And I think, when focusing on Wall Street, it's the way that the young Charlie Sheen sells his soul.
Mm, exactly, yeah. He starts off idealistic and it gradually gets more and more corrupted. And you'll be glad to know it's in the IMDb's top 5,000 movies, I've just noted. Okay, so what's your third movie, the one in the middle?
The one in the middle, we shift gears here.
Okay.
It's a more recent film, but it's still fairly old. It's called Office Space.
Ah, yes, I know Office Space. Tell me about that.
I just find that so funny. And again, I relate to it because all the computer screens are from the 90s.
Mm.
It's a and what they do in this movie is they just take the rip out of all of the falseness that you have to go through to appear okay in these large offices.
In the business world, yeah. And it maximises the sort of impersonality of the cubicle space as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
But what is fantastic is it throws it on its head, and the lead character has an experience where he's not he's called Peter Gibbons in the film, and he suddenly forgets that he's supposed to be all kind of screwed up and whatever, and just relaxes in life, and then just his whole life's a dream, and all the things you'd love to do in real life in an office area, you know, he does.
Yes, he gets to do. Yeah. John Livingston, Jennifer Aniston. When she was less well-known, I think that was probably while she was still doing Friends. Let's have a look at the date. We're talking 1999, so, yeah, quite a long time ago. And there's that bizarre character who sort of hangs around talking very quietly to himself and gradually has a more and more increasingly important role to play in the whole thing. I won't give anything more away.
Very quotable, you know. It's like, you know, okay, but I'll set the place on fire, and, you know, is this...
Yes, that's right.
You completely underestimate him, but actually steals the show at the end.
He does, totally, absolutely. Okay, what's the next film?
Number two
on Best Five. We would have a huge countdown with music, but sadly our budget doesn't stretch that far. Anyway, carry on.
Is Rogue Trader.
Ah, yes.
The story of Nick Leeson.
Another banking one.
Because these are the films that have influenced me. You know, we could come up with a different top five if you want entertainment or whatever. But
yeah.
This story of Nick Leeson is just incredible. I'll give you the story very briefly in case listeners are not familiar with it. But how can one man fool some pretty intelligent people and accountants for so long?
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they realise what's going on, the market turns against him with an almighty bet that he's put with the bank's money, and they can't cover the margins, and bang.
A rather sobering story, and actually has been repeated in other banking stories more recently, hasn't it? Other people have been sent to jail and all sorts of things for essentially dishonest trading. But you can see how the line of what is right and wrong can easily become blurred when you're pushed to the edge by the demands that are placed on you by the high sort of high stakes banking environment.
That's right. See, and I was part of that environment, and I can relate to that. It was very stressful, and you have to keep delivering. He does it. He finds a way of keeping this charade going, and you live with the character thinking, how on earth? But it's true. It's true.
It's Ewan McGregor, another great performance from him. And then finally, incidentally, before we get to number one, I've noticed all the films deal with hustlers, cheats and fantasists. Is there anything you want to tell us, Steve?
Well, this one is different.
Okay, this sounds good.
This one is Blade Runner.
Wow, Blade Runner, great movie.
It's a great movie, but do the listeners know that when it came out, it was 1982, completely overshadowed by E.T.
Right, I can well imagine, yeah.
And it was a box office flop.
Mm-hmm, which isn't uncommon for some great movies, yeah.
Yeah, and it's only with the releases of videos and DVDs.
And director's cuts and all the rest of it, yeah.
Yeah, that it's just become this amazing cult classic.
So, briefly, for listeners who aren't familiar, what does it entail?
Well, the Blade Runner is Harrison Ford.
Yep.
And he's retired, and his job is to hunt down five escapees, although later we find out six.
Okay.
Of these kind of genetically created people.
Okay, so they're not real people, not real humans.
No.
And what is a Blade Runner?
Well, he's the guy that takes out the rogue ones.
Okay.
And they're not supposed to be on Earth, you see.
So basically his job is to hunt them down. So a Blade Runner is someone who can spot the difference between a human being and one of these imposter... Now, there's a huge debate about this movie, the first version and the released cinema version with the narration, and the later version without the narration and the extended ending and all the rest of it. And with the ambiguities kind of ironed out, some would say, which one do you prefer? What side of the fence are you on?
Director's cut.
Okay, that's interesting, because I know most people think the director's cut, and I can understand why too. What is it about this movie that you love so much?
The thing that appeals to me, and I watched it just before, I knew we were going to talk about this, and actually I can't really watch it anymore. I can only watch bits of it. It's just so desperate. It's just so sad.
Yeah.
The appeal to me, and I think if people are honest with themselves, the appeal to a lot of people in this is the world that he's created.
Yeah.
They project that language all gets mixed up. As all the cultures merge, and it's overcrowded.
Yep.
There's no real hope in the film. There's no real hope at all.
But the thing is, the other thing I was going to note was the architecture and the world he's created. You've got cheek by jowl, very old-fashioned and concrete sort of stuff, and then you've got more modern, futuristic designs. You've got things that are influenced by Frank Lloyd Wright. So it has echoes to the turn of the 19th and 20th century, that sort of epoch, if you like. And yet it's set in the future. So it has a real, there's a dissonance there between what you expect to see and what you actually do see. It kind of feels very lived in, which actually Ridley Scott did manage to create in The Nostromo in Alien, because there again was a spaceship that had grime on the walls. It was sort of lived in. Things were not perfect. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, and in another top five, Alien would be in there.
Yeah.
Because of the sheer production values of the film.
I mean, I suppose you could do a top five of Ridley Scott films, couldn't you?
Well, I would.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But if I have to pick one, yep, it's this one, because of its influence.
And, of course, borrowed very heavily when it came to the Wachowski brothers' first film, The Matrix, of course. That whole grim, futuristic element. You think, this is the future. If that's anything like reality, I don't want any part of it. But, of course, that turns out to be not reality. Anyway, we could go on all night. But thank you very much, Steve, for all you've shared with us tonight. Tell us, once again, what your name is on the internet.
So I'm Sci-Fi Funk.
Sci-Fi Funk.
Yeah, and I'm looking to do a Blade Runner-style film as an animated series. This is the film that influenced me to recreate that, except in the world that I'm creating, there aren't Blade Runners, but that whole kind of overcrowded, depressing backdrop, that's what I'm creating.
Wonderful. Okay, Steve, thank you very much. Hope Bournemouth doesn't end up as depressing as that.
Many thanks, David.
Okay, cheers. Steve Payne there from Sci-Fi Funk. Listeners' comments. Andy Barons wanted to make mention of the Fender Telecaster. I shall be talking about the Fender Stratocaster in future podcasts. And he also wanted to pay homage to the wonderful work of P.G. Wodehouse, which is, again, something that I like very much and will be talking about in another podcast. So very much along the same lines there. Finally, I've had report that the Italian coffee shop Giovanni's cafe and restaurant in Bloomsbury is really worth trying out, and I will be reporting back from there in the not too distant future. Apparently their food is really very good indeed, but their coffee is absolutely sublime. So listen out for those and anything more, and please keep sending your comments, keep contributing, keep telling me all about the stuff that you like. And again, if you want to be interviewed, just let me know. I'm David Simmons, and this podcast has been brought to you by Absolute Productions, a division of Absolute Communication.